B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, this quarterback matchup is pretty special. And I'm just wondering, you know, all the years that you've been doing this, how often do you kind of look over your shoulder and use that as motivation, looking at guys like Drew and see, you know, that he's still doing it at such a high level? Like, has that been a push for you throughout your career?
He's a lot younger than me. I mean, he's 18 months older than me, so 18 months younger. 18 months ago, I felt pretty good, so I've got a little advanced age on him and experience, but I'm hanging in there. He's had a terrific year, and he's a great player. I've known him for a long time. Always had a great amount of respect for him, and going all the way back to his Purdue days. And my roommate, when I first got to the Patriots, was from Purdue and was really good friends with Drew. And, always just kept up with him and gotten to know him somewhat well over the years, and just think so much of him as a person, as a player. And, I know what it takes to do what he's doing. He knows what it takes to do what I'm doing. And I think there's just a lot of mutual respect.
All right, that's Brady on the Bucks Breeze Saints matchup coming your way Sunday. We kick off hour number two here on Agenda Free Friday. Again, Agenda Free are driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life, BernardiAutoGroup.com. Dan in Extra wants to weigh in on that very game, Bucks Saints. Go ahead, Dan.
Absolutely. Hey, I think Maz was close when he said the, the big thing in the game is going to be the Bucks defense. I kind of want to go and say it's more so the Saints offense that's going to be the deciding factor. And you can also double check this on me, but I think Brady has never won in Lambeau Field, and that's the only stadium he's never won in. So you want to say he's got a little extra motivation. And then, he did?
Yeah, it was 05, I think, 04. It was somewhere in there. It was. I remember it well.
I think we were both at that game.
Oh, were you there?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, I bought myself a cheesehead there.
Oh, that a boy.
Yeah.
Well, I got very excited with that, man.
That was the day Aaron Rodgers got in late.
Yes.
Because, it was like 35 to 7 or something.
Not late. Not late. First half, maybe even the first quarter.
Oh, was that early?
And you know why, Maz?
Yeah, because it was deer hunting season.
Because hunting season, I've ranted about this before. Hunting season began the day before in Wisconsin. That was the opening of deer hunting season, which Brett Favre told the production crew. We know this because the CBS or whoever production crew said during the broadcast, yeah, we were having a good conversation with Favre, but he left early because he said it was the kickoff of deer hunting season and he had to go hunt. And then the next game he bagged out in the first quarter with what he said was an elbow. You know what it was? A freaking hangover. He was in a freaking tree or in the back of someone's pickup truck all day chugging beer, because that's what you do when you hunt, basically, right?
Basically.
Okay, so he was hungover, is what I think he was. And he bagged out in the first quarter, first half. You blew him out. It was a Corey Dillon year, so whatever. So he has one at Lambeau. What was his other Bucks Saints? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's more about the Saints defense. So that Saints offense, I don't know. Drew Brees has looked shaky for the better part of the whole season. And I know that Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas are now healthy, so you got to worry about them, but no, the key to beating the Bucks and getting at Brady, it's already been shown in these two games that they beat him in the regular season. It's the defense. They only got to rush three or four. They get pressure. They flood the field, take away the middle of the field so he can't throw to Gronk or Cameron Brate, and that's how they get to him. His numbers against the Saints this year are wretched. 5 interceptions he has against them in those two games.
And I think Brees is something like 5-2 in his career against Brady on top of it. So, to me, look, the on paper, the game is New Orleans. Okay, I don't care what the spread is. It's only 3. So on paper, the game is New Orleans. If Tampa Bay makes the same mistake a third time around, then the entire coaching staff should be fired.
Okay, here's Matt in Manchester on a piece of breaking news that Murray just gave you in the update. It is, I think, the most stunning news that I've heard today. And that is, go ahead, Matt in Manchester. What do you want to talk about?
First off, I just want to say that I missed the Dan Shaughnessy at Tomato Can game going in this weekend. It just breaks my heart.
Yeah.
But can you guys just comment on Dan Campbell? Dan Campbell, the favorite for the Lions The Lions head coaching job. The Lions.
Matt Campbell. Matt Campbell.
Dan Campbell.
Whatever his name is.
The bro coach.
Dude, invaluable, man.
The bro coach. This is the guy that took over from Miami a couple of years ago and, like...
Yes.
He was Chris Farley motivational speaker. Like, this...
Yes.
He's kind of a clown.
Like, yes.
This is who the Lions are going with now?
Yeah.
I wanted to see is guys come out and compete and violently compete. And I felt that today.
That's their bright idea. Dan Campbell, bro.
Well, I'm not telling these guys to go out and start throwing punches, but hey, if guys get a little bit heated and they get after it a little bit, you may have some of those.
How? How is this possible? How of all the candidates? You can't find someone in college?
Yes.
You can't try to, and I get it, it's the Detroit Lions, it's not the most attractive job in the NFL.
Yes.
It's still an NFL head coaching job. You can't throw a ton of money at Lincoln Riley.
Yes.
You go with this guy?
Yes.
I think it's perfect. Dan Campbell and the Lions.
Yes.
That's perfect. It's a match made in hell. There's
yes.
no chance it'll work.
I mean, seriously. Did you even know this guy was a candidate?
No,
dude,
no.
It's invaluable, man.
Every once in a while, they'll flash him on a Saints game, because the Saints obviously got a lot of primetime games or whatever. I'm like, oh, there's that hammerhead. And then you hear that he is a candidate, and I was like, well, that can't be true. It's
Hold
be,
on, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I say it's going to be a different Dan Campbell. But no, it's this one.
Where's he even working now?
Saints.
When you have pads on, you have to make the very most of that day.
As what?
Tight ends coach. An assistant head coach. Assistant head coach.
Yes.
It's invaluable, man.
So that was part of that whole, like, he almost cried in the locker room. Like,
dude, it's invaluable, man.
Well, what was, do you have that whole locker room speech? Say, I hardly remember the details.
It's mano y mano.
They were, I don't know, they won two of their last five games or something. They were 4-12. I don't remember. They sucked, but they won a couple games, and he, like, broke down in the locker room. Do you remember that?
Yeah, we did bits. Yeah. We called him Cambo, like he was Rambo.
Yeah, that is. That's
now
right.
I have to find that Rambo bit.
Oh, it is. It's great. That whole rant, though, is good. It's invaluable, man.
Oh, my God.
He's so going to get to that podium, and it's Detroit. How many times? It's good to be in a blue-collar city, because I'm a blue-collar guy, and you guys are blue-collar fans. Oh.
Yes.
Yes.
Scully in Boston, what do you got for us on the Bruins? Go ahead, Scully.
Yes.
All right, so I just got real quick. So the first idiot that ruined sports is John Brankus, that idiot on sports science. I just want to get that out there. That's where all these tech geeks are coming from. Second thing that I got is that Tuca, he had, what, 20 saves last night compared to Blackwood's, what, 37 saves? And that five hole, that thing is wider than my ex-wife, okay? Let's just say that. Marshawn is not that great. Now we're going to have to hear about this for the next 3 months. That's all I got.
Thanks for the call. Maz, it's no different than your line.
I know. I probably take that back. I was, I sort of used it generically about, you know, he's talking about someone's wife.
His wife.
Ex. Okay. Who knows what she
Oh, well, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, it's just suffice it to say that Jersey goalie has a big five hole.
I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like that last night. As soon as I saw that angle on the shootout, I went, holy crap, how did I not notice that earlier? Wow.
But, you know, for all the blowing the Rask people are doing after game one for some reason, which is just preposterous, right? Was it even that great of a night? And I would tell you, yes, it was. He didn't do much in the first two periods. He didn't really need to. But to me, you can make 22 saves and it can be a brilliant night. You got to make them when you got to make them. And he made them in the overtime in the shootout when he absolutely had to have it. I mean, that breakaway in the 3-on-3, which we let off the show with, I mean, the guy had the break starting inside of his own blue line. Like, I don't know if that makes it easier or harder or something, but it was something. I mean, the game's on the line. The guy's got the entire sheet to come up with his move, and Rask didn't blink, and, you know, it was a no-brainer save for him, and that was a huge save. I don't care if he made one save on the night.
And that second one, too, that ricocheted all over the place, I certainly don't put on him. And believe me, I'm always quick to jump on Rask. He was good. It was good, but it's not blow-worthy.
No, he's a good goalie. Well, is anyone debating he's not good? So, like, he's a good goalie, and he should have a good season. He's got a lot at stake. That's not the debate. That's not the question with Rask. The question is, how do you feel Game 7, and is he going to be there at the end? That's the question with the guy. Like, everyone knows he's good and can put together a good season and certainly a good half season, which is what they're going to be this year. So that's not – I don't know what that's proving, but either way, I'll take it. We could take a little quick break here on Agenda Free Friday, and then we get back to your phones. Don't go anywhere.
Tell your head. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass. Way more than just a sports talk radio show.
This truly is the apocalypse.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Whenever you're meshing personalities, I think we've got to wait and see how this all fits on the floor and so forth. I think these guys have given us the right answers. They've said, hey, they want to play together. They can see this fitting. I think they're at a time in their careers. I don't want to speak for each one of them because I'll let them have their own voice and their own narrative around this. But I think they understand that there's without a doubt going to be some nights where one or two need to sacrifice for the other and so forth. But I think they're all looking for that common goal. We're all looking for that common goal, you know, as I've said before, is to be the last team standing. And I think when you have a group that is willing to sacrifice and play hard, play together on the court, and, you know, they already have a relationship, a prior relationship to this. So I think that will help. We're not bringing guys in here that, you know, the level of play that they are that don't know each other from the past. So they have previous relationships. We'll certainly help here.
Again, that's a Brooklyn GM, Sean Marks, on the arrival of James Harden and everyone buying in. We'll see. You heard the Adam Jones promo there right before it, talking about this is Golden State if those guys buy in. I don't agree with that in terms of style of play. I mean, level of talent, yes, maybe. You know, but that's debatable. But, I mean, I think, you know, Kyrie, Steph, Harden, like the Tristan Thompson, like they're all elite players. Like, level of talent, I'll give Jones. But in terms of style of play, no freaking way. Steph Curry and Tristan Thompson are catch-and-shoot guys. James Harden and Kyrie Irving are guys that pound the ball into the floor, right, Maz?
Absolutely different. In fact, as I was listening to that promo, I even said, well, it's not the same because can we compare the character and makeup of the players?
Oh, yeah, there's that too.
I mean, Curry, Thompson, even Durant. Durant plays. You know, and I say even Durant because I didn't love the whole thing of him going to Golden State and to win his championships and blah, blah, blah. But on the floor, Durant's a good teammate.
Impeccable.
Yes, and so are the other two. Like, I would say Thompson and Curry, those are not hog-the-ball kind of guys, and their personalities are not look-at-me. I mean, they got some of that in them, but they're not like Harden and Kyrie. Those two guys are – that's an accident waiting to happen, and everybody knows it.
I think Charles Barkley last night put it perfectly, Jimmy. You just have that little snippet of Barkley, what he called it last night? If he could, I thought.
It's going to be a fun fascination. I mean, KD went from the Splash Brothers to the Dribble Brothers. It's going to be fun watching them play. Dribble.
He went from the Splash Brothers to the Dribble Brothers. But that's sort of it. Like, I mean, Steph Curry, I know, you know, brings the ball up and handles the ball, but they move the ball. Like, that's what the Golden State Warriors are known for, that ball movement. Harden's not known for that, you know, for isolating and pounding the ball into the floor. And Kyrie might not be quite as bad as that, but it's something like it. So that those two have to play totally different. To be the Golden State Warrior, they have to play totally differently, I think.
I mean, if they buy in, that part is true. The talent is there for them to be historically good. I mean, you hear people saying that the three of them could combine for 100 points in a game. True. Absolutely true. I mean, they have those kinds of scorers. The question is whether they can be unselfish. And I certainly question whether Kyrie is there because he's still relatively young and we all know his personality. Harden is sort of on that line. He should be, given all that has gone wrong for him, he should be at a point in his career where he says, okay, I'm going to accept a lesser role for the greater good. He should be there. I'm not sure he is.
Okay. Here's Bill and Whitman back to our realignment question. Go ahead, Bill. William, is he up, Jimmy?
The NFL.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill. I'm sorry. Start over if you don't mind.
No. When it comes to the alignment, the NFL, no doubt about it, top of the list. you know, what, two conferences, AFC, NFC, get rid of these divisions. Mike, you're a Packers fan, right? Aren't you sick and tired of seeing the Lions twice a year? Now you're going to see Dan Campbell twice a year? Do you really need to see that? No, you know, and you brought up a point a year ago, and you were dead on. Aaron Rodgers plays at Gillette Stadium once every 8 years, and how much that sucks, and Brady going to Lambeau, vice versa. Well, when you have to play these teams twice a year, that's the unfortunate problem right now. And you know, Tom Brady's played one time in his career in San Francisco, 21 years. So, you know, just line the divisions up. I mean, get rid of the divisions. You don't have any of these 7-9 teams making it. You know, go 1-7 in each conference. Have your top of the seed got teams like you did this year with Kansas City and Green Bay. Yeah. And go from there. No more divisions, actually, in any of the sports, but especially the NFL. Because I'm like, as a Patriots fan, I'm sick of the Bills twice a year. I'm sick of the Jets. And, you know, it's like, let's open it up a little bit more. And I think that would be a good idea.
Well, let me just stop you.
Hmm. Convenient time to get sick of the Bills.
I was going
to
say, very convenient that you're now sick of some of these teams.
Agree or disagree on divisions?
I disagree. I like the division thing.
Me too.
And I'll tell you, unlike most people, I think including Murray, the fact that Washington was in this year didn't bother me in the least bit. Didn't bother me in the least bit. So they're 7-9. Fine. Okay, they had the good fortune of being in a bad division. Sometimes you are, sometimes you aren't. That's the way it goes. But they won their division, they're in. I don't mind having that sort of element every now and then. I don't.
No, the only place divisions don't work is basketball. You can't even name who they are. You don't even know what the divisions are. You don't know who's in what. No one pays attention to it. It does not matter. And in fact, they even now ignore it in some of the seedings, don't they? You can be a division winner and be seated lower than a non-division winner. I think they altered that, but no one even keeps track of it. So, like, that's why I mentioned if any sport could afford to go to just all conference play or league-wide play, it would be the NBA because there's just no. But you would hate to lose Red Sox, Yankees, Dodgers, you know, Giants, things like that. Cubs, Cardinals, like. No, there's too many good ones that are worth keeping. And I would say the same thing about Green Bay and the NFC North. You know, yeah, I'm a little sick of Detroit. I wish they banned the domes. I hate that Minnesota, you know, has a dome. But I like seeing the Bears twice a year. I don't know. I think that's okay. Could they realign, though? I mean, does it make sense for Miami to still be in the Patriots division? You know, this is one that you hear. You swap out, you bring in Baltimore and you swap out Miami, something like that, to spice up the AFC East. I don't know.
So I like, you know, look, I'm not someone that puts an emphasis on history, but I don't mind it being an element. And so just think of some of those kind of. The other thing is that I am a believer in the familiarity breeds contempt. Yeah. And so when you have to start playing the same team over and over again over a period of years, you know, that Patriots-Jets thing, that was good stuff. Like, and the stuff that goes on, the NFC East, think of some of those rivalries. Giants-Redskins, Giants-Cowboys, Cowboys-Redskins. Like, you know, there's history there that just by the nature of the matchup, you say, ooh, I'm going to watch that one. Like, keep some of that.
Mike and Nasher, what do you got for us today?
Tony, you forgot Giants-Eagles. After what happened, you know, when they threw the game, the Giants are going to be fired up. I can't wait for those two games. But I originally called to talk about Josh Allen, but this Dan Campbell thing's got me reeling. Do you guys remember last year when, you know, Tom's going to Tampa Bay? Oh, Tampa Bay's the worst. No, they're not. Detroit's the worst. They've been around forever. They never even sniffed the Super Bowl.
The worst brand in football is it's still Tampa Bay because, well, I mean, Detroit are bigger losers, but Detroit's the Ford family, and they have Super Bowl. I don't know. They have them in Tampa, too. I don't know.
But I mean, cool logo. There's legacy there, even though it's a losing legacy. Like,
they're history, but they're still losers. Like, let's not talk up the Lions like they're some sort of model franchise. They're a joke. Dan Campbell? I mean, I don't think he's ever called plays, ever. On either side of the ball, which, you know, part of me kind of likes. There's too many coordinators who are head coaches who just call plays on one side of the ball and then ignore the other. So this guy, though, I mean, here's his coaching resume. I'm just reading from Wikipedia. What was he before? It was his first job to be that coaching intern in Miami?
I think, wasn't he also the tight ends coach in Miami?
Well, he used to be a tight end.
Well, so, but he was, I mean, this is his wiki says his last year as a player was 2009, and that year he was the interim coach was 2010.
The sleeping giant is awake. He can't take a nap. There are no naps.
I'm a motivator.
No naps. He was an interim coach in 10. Then he was the tight ends coach. Then he went back to being the tight ends coach in Miami for 4 years. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He was the interim coach in 2015.
15, right.
So, I got to check my readers here. He was a coaching intern in 2010, not interim. Intern.
Intern means they don't pay me.
He was an intern. So he went from being a tight end to the intern in 2010. Then he was the tight ends coach from 11 to 15. Then he was the interim head coach in 2015. And then he went to the Saints where he became the tight ends coach and the assistant to the head coach, meaning what? He got him his coffee? Like, what do you use the assist? It's not even assistant head coach. Assistant to the head coach? Did he answer phones? Like, what does that mean?
Whenever Sean Payton needs Percocet, I go out on the street and shake down a dealer, and I get it for him.
Like, yes.
Yes.
He sent flowers on Mother's Day and Valentine's Day.
Excellent. Oh, man. I mean, part of me, like, one of the things I hate about these NFL head coaches is they're all coordinators. So the offensive coordinator calls the plays on offense, and then when the defense is on the field, if you're Andy Reid, he goes and sits on the bench. You don't even pay attention. Like, no, dude, you're the head coach. You're supposed to pay attention to everything. And so the one thing I'll say about Joe Judge, the one thing I'll say about, I guess, Dan Campbell, is that they're not just wedded to their play sheet because they're not calling plays. But I got to ask, what are you doing?
Okay,
because you've never been a coordinator. You've never called plays. You go from, like, motivational speaker, the assistant to the head coach, picking up guys at the airport, I guess, and tight ends, which, again, is one of the most useless positional coaching things. It's that and running backs. How many tight ends are on a roster, Mess?
Three. Tops.
Two? Three?
Yeah, so this is what I was just going to say to you. It's one thing to say Joe Judge, who's a special teams coach.
Right,
he's in charge of a unit, right? And even if it's just extra points and punts and kick returns, it's
He coaches 30 guys, massive organization, different guys from different units, who's on, who's off. I hate to steal your thunder, but that's what you're saying. A tight ends coach?
Totally.
You two, get over here. And that's it. That's all he's doing.
I mean, why not hire the running backs coach or the offensive line coach? Like, it feels like a big jump to me. That's all. Feels like a big jump.
Offensive line coach?
Closer.
Way more to a coordinator and a guy who's got a lot of moving pieces. He's got 8-9 guys that he's in charge of. And then there's passing game. There's running game. He's got to know what everyone's doing on the field. The tight ends and the running backs coach. The running backs coach, he coaches three guys, and what's the coach? Run there. don't get tackled. Like, the tight end, there's a little more to the tight end position, but still, you're coaching two or three glorified lunkheads, and that's it.
I can't believe the Lions hired this guy.
He's football Tony Robbins, just nothing more than motivational. And I get loud, and I got a big mouth and a million teeth, too.
That's a dumb franchise. Boy, is that a dumb franchise.
Wow. We continue with your thoughts. I promise, right back to your calls after Murray's update.
The sleeping giant is awake. He can't take a nap. There are no naps.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Maz get all their inside information?
I heard from a guy at a cocktail party.
Always relying on their credible sources. Felger and Maz, the show to come to when sports news breaks.
Oh! Here's your we're back with your phones on everything, excuse me, and I'm going to give you here your Kaplansky. What matters most in sports? Again, let's talk about what matters most from the week in sports. It is presented by Kaplansky Insurance. They protect what matters most for you. For auto, home, or business insurance, experience the Kaplansky difference for yourself and experience it today. Yes, there is a difference. Kaplansky.com. And what matters most in sports is Brady back on the field this weekend trying to extend the Buccaneers season and drive home the point to Bill Belichick and the Belichickites, like myself, run up the score with every win here in the postseason. The closer Brady gets to the Super Bowl, the worse it looks for Bill Belichick and the Patriots. So that's what matters most this weekend. Tony and Stoneham has a thought on that. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, guys, how you doing? I tried to get you yesterday, but you left me on hold for an hour and then shut up. Sorry. Anyway, about you're talking about penalties in sports. The one penalty that should be looked at is the helmet penalty when a player is running, not the quarterback back passing, but when the player pass is completed, et cetera. Because the normal move for any human, when if you think you're going to get hit by something, you lower yourself. So the receiver is more guilty than the tackler if I was helmet to helmet on that situation. Now, the 15th week next year, because Brady's coming up to Foxborough.
Okay, in week 15. They haven't set the schedule yet. He's coming here, but we'll see it. I thought you were going to talk about Bucs Saints. On the unintended, what my question was on the replay is hockey has tightened up that offsides review, which is the most mind-numbing, ridiculous thing with the skate off the ice. Your skate can now be off the ice, and it's not offsides as long as it's within the plane of the blue line. That corrects what I consider one of the most ridiculous unintended consequences of replay. And that was my question, not what rule changes do you want. I know, Murray, you had said spot foul for intentional for pass interference. Yeah. I'm not talking about like big macro rule changes. I'm talking about the unintended consequence of replay, like in baseball. The pop-up slide, where the guy keeps his glove on the guy's back, and when he pops up from the base, he is off the base for a split second between his foot coming off or hand coming off, and now he's out. Like, that's an unintended consequence of replay that's ridiculous, that shouldn't be out. Just like previously in hockey, those plays should not have been offsides. You know, what else is there? In basketball, reviewing the flagrant offensive foul with the knee in the air going for the layup, but he knees the guy in the groin. You know, like how could a guy going for a layup with his knee up possibly be aiming for the groin? You know, and now they review all those times, and we're sitting there waiting for these guys to figure out if it's a flagrant one or a flagrant two because the guy went up for a layup with his knee up. Like, that's ridiculous.
Well, so I told you yesterday that I think the NFL has gotten way better on the catch rule. And there was a play in that Washington game. I couldn't remember the play, and you pointed out yesterday it was in the Washington-Tampa Bay game where the receiver caught the ball, got his feet in down, and the ball moved just a little bit in his hands. I was afraid they were going to reverse it, and they didn't. And I was so happy to see that. I'll give you another one in basketball that drives me crazy and always has. And I understand it's the letter of the law. But when a guy's going up for a rebound and grabs a rebound, and the guy comes behind him and hits the back of his hand and knocks the ball out of bounds, and the guy who went up for the rebound is the guy who actually touched the ball last.
Right.
I hate that because ultimately it's the force or the action of the other guy that forced the ball out. And so, the idea of who touched it last, you can watch the play and know immediately by someone swiping the ball, swiping it a hand, whose motion propelled the ball out of bounds.
Right.
Oftentimes in real time, they call it that way, and then they go back and look and they reverse it. Right. I hate that.
Because it rolls off the other guy's fingertips, and so he touched it last, when it's really the guy that swiped it is the one who put it out of bounds.
Exactly. And in real time, they call it on the, they call it correctly. They call it the guy who swiped. He forced the ball out. And then they look at a replay and reverse it. And that one drives me bananas.
Just call it for what it is. Replay blows. Nick in Westford, if you could pop him up here online, too. He's got a thought on Bucs Saints. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Just a quick question. I want to get your opinion on something. A couple minutes ago, Matt said that if the Bucs can't figure it out the third time around against the Saints, the whole coaching staff should be fired. I was just curious on what you guys think the magic formula is, because I don't really think there's a game plan that cures Brady pissing himself with pressure up the middle. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on what they could possibly do to fix it this time.
Nick, thank you, Mass.
Extra blockers. And when I say if they can't figure it out this time around, I don't mean they have to win the game. I mean, if the same thing happens that happened in the first two, which is they get manhandled up front, Brady gets killed, and effectively they can't score because they didn't score in either game. I don't remember the score of the first one, but I'm pretty sure they got under 20, and the second one they got 3. With all that artillery on offense, they got 3 points against the Saints because Brady wasn't protected. So I would hope that going in this time, they say, we got to protect the quarterback if we're going to have any chance at all.
But isn't Bruce Arians sort of known for exposing his quarterback?
And, yes.
Yeah.
Protecting his quarterback sort of being his last priority?
Yes, what did they do in the Washington game?
It was better. Well, they kept tight ends in.
So this is what I'm saying, is at some point, if you just keep doing what you're doing and you get the same result over and over again, that's a fireable offense. Now, it's not going to happen. I'm not telling you that Arians is going to get fired. But I look at them and say, that's 100% on the coaches. If they go in there and Brady gets killed again, How do you look at that coaching staff and take him seriously?
And you'll know it early, too, because if you just remember that Sunday night game, which was middle of the season, I think it was week 9. I mean, it was evident within the first few minutes of the first quarter, like, oh, he's got nothing. He was feeling heat immediately. That offensive line was a sieve, and there was nothing he could do. If it looks just like that Sunday night, they got no chance.
Mike, that performance in that second New Orleans game was one of the great all-time duds. It was a dud. Everyone was expecting Tampa to answer that night, and they got annihilated. And I just looked it up. They scored 23 in the first game. But I remember it.
It wasn't close.
Yeah, it didn't feel like that. They got slapped around, I felt like, the whole game. And they scored a touchdown late to make it 23. But if Brady goes in and gets killed again, I hold the coach 100% accountable for that. 100%.
Long commercial-free segment is next, folks. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
It's the show the crowd goes wild for.
Boo! Boo.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I was in the plane and they handed me a letter, and it was from Coach Belichick. And he wrote me the most beautiful letter.
Our friendship goes back many years. And I think anybody that's spent more than 5 minutes with me knows I'm not a political person. My comments are not politically motivated. I have a friendship and a loyalty to Donald. A couple weeks ago, we had Secretary of State Kerry in our locker room. It's another friend of mine. Can't imagine two people with more different political views than those two. But to me, friendship and loyalty is just about that. It's not about political or religious views. I write hundreds of letters and notes every month. Doesn't mean I agree with every single thing that every person thinks about politics, religion, or other subjects. But I have multiple friendships that are important to me, and that's what that was about.
All right, it's Agenda-Free Friday. So everything from the week we've gotten to or have yet to get to, that was certainly a big story early in the week, and it was percolating to be a real big one. Talk about something that, you know, went away when Belichick decided not to go. That really nipped that in the bud, and really, the story just went away. So, like, in that respect, Belichick did himself a favor. Some people would say it's the right thing. I mean, to me, it's the right thing only if he believed it. If he just did something he didn't believe in, then I don't know if you can say if it's the right thing. It's probably the prudent thing for his football team, and Chris Gasper is going to join us at 4 o'clock from Channel 5, and I think Chris wants to weigh in on this about the impact of Belichick's allegiance with Trump across the league and how that impacts Bill's standing. And that was probably a big factor in his decision. In that case, it would be smart. But five days later, Maz, are there any follow up thoughts on this? I think we're all kind of glad it just went away, right?
Yeah, look, again, the way I sort of settled it or reconciled it was to say it was the smart thing to do. Now, again, I can't tell you what his innermost political beliefs are and whether he's more on board with Trump than he is with Kerry. I doubt it. My guess is that if he leans one way or the other, it's more Kerry than Trump. And I'm basing that purely on the influence of his father, where he went to college and where he works. Like, that's just my read of it from that. But I think it was a smart thing to do because, as you said, since that happened, what happened? It went away. So, yeah. To me, that was for Bill and for the football team, which is really the part, the perspective I was coming from. I think it was the smart thing to do.
You know, but even now, if the point is to be attractive to NFL players, you know, and keep the peace there, I think, you know, the thing that Bill said there back in 2016, explaining that letter to Trump during the campaign, you know, it's about friendship and loyalty to Donald. Like, I don't think he'd say that now. Like, if the whole point is to distance himself from Trump, you know, you can't even be friends with the dude. You can't even talk about loyalty. You call him Donald. Like, I mean, I don't think you'll get that out of Bill now if that happens. But anyway, here we'll get some calls in before we get to Chris Gasper. Bobby in the truck on the Bruins. Go ahead, Bobby.
Hey, Felger. So I was reading an article that Ty Anderson put out the other day that said that the Bruins stapled Zboril to Kevin Miller this preseason. And I'll be honest, I've been leading the charge against Kevin Miller on Twitter. I have no reason why he's here. But if the one thing he does this year is somehow brings Jakub Zboril along into a relatively decent NHL player that can contribute, then okay, I'll be fine with it, and I'll die on that hill.
Okay, babe. I'll tell you, Kevin Miller's good. He just can't stay on the ice.
Yeah, I thought that combo looked pretty good last night, too.
I've always liked him as a player. What's not to like? He brings you needed toughness. He's got a little bit of something going forward, a little. I would not call him an offensive defenseman by any stretch or any sort of puck mover, but he's got a little something, and his tough, and I've always liked him as a player. He can't stay on the ice. So, like, that's always been the issue with him. But Zboril, I was pleasantly surprised. He looked like an NHL defenseman. But, again, let's remember, how many real forwards do the New Jersey Devils throw out there?
I mean, they're putrid.
That might be one of the worst teams in hockey. Speaking of the Bruins, Mike in the truck has a thought. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I just wanted to get in a quick comment on the departure of Chara. And I want to preface this by saying I'm the type of guy that doesn't normally get a jersey with somebody's name on it because I feel like as soon as I do, they're going to get traded or injured. But Chara is one of the only people that I do have.
Oops, that was my fault. I hit something. That was my fault. Do you miss Zdeno Chara?
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't. I don't, but I'll tell you what. When I saw the highlights of the Capitals game and I saw him in that uniform and standing in front of the net, boy, you get used to that sort of image, don't you? Yeah. Like the way he's such a presence in front of the net, you can't miss him when he's on the ice. But I'm glad the Bruins have turned the page. I just think it was time. In some ways, I feel the same way about this as I did with Brady, that you get to a certain stage and it's like, look, sooner or later, you just got to rip off the Band-Aid and you got to go to someone else. And I want to see McAvoy become the guy. And I just don't think that that was going to happen on the ice or in the locker room while Chara was here. I think in order for that to happen, Chara had to go.
John in Connecticut, what do you got for us?
Hey, guys. So just two quick things. First, you know, the argument versus, you know, coach versus player or quarterback, I should say, who's more important. Just look at Mahomes and Andy Reid. I mean, before Mahomes, Andy Reid was literally a time boob. The guy couldn't do anything right. Now he's, like, considered, like, this, I don't even know what to call him. He's the
You're
guy
overstating
now
it.
Among coaches.
You're overstating. Andy Reid was always a good coach. He was imperfect, well, but he was a good coach.
But not everybody considered him a great coach.
Yeah, I don't consider him a great coach now.
He's a great coach.
No.
Then my next thing was, as far as, you know, where the game is right now with everything being soft or whatnot, you know, I don't think that's going to change, but I do worry that it's going to get even worse. And I typically saw a couple of plays this year where even Mahomes, for example, he'd go out of bounds and then all of a sudden somebody would like barely touch him and the guy would flop. If that turns into a thing going forward, well, call me in Maz's camp. If that's in, I'm out.
Okay, John. The whole running quarterback thing, I've reached my limit. It ceased to entertain me. And Mahomes does flop. He does flop. So now it's like, it's just frustrating to watch as a fan. It's like your defense does everything right. Everyone's covered. There's nowhere to go. Lamar Jackson or Pat Mahomes or Josh Allen or all these guys now that can run find one little seam. It's 3rd and 6. They pick up 7 and then they slide and you can't even touch them. Or they dip out of bounds and you can't even touch them. And if you touch them, they flop. And now there's another 15. It's like, that's not why I watch the game. But that is the direction of the game. And if you don't have one of those guys, are you porked? Back to Andy Reid. I think all Mahomes did was get him a championship. So now he's sort of broken the seal. But I don't think anyone, like, he took Donovan effing McNabb, who, I'm sorry, sucks.
A slob.
To 4 NFC championship games? 5? What was it? Like
4 in a row, I think.
I mean, they were constantly there. So if you can get that guy to that level, that consistently, you're good. He turned Alex Smith into a star. Andy Reid's a good coach.
He came in here with Alex Smith and put 42 up on Belichick. So he's a tremendous offensive coach. Tremendous.
So
and again, Mahomes just got him his title, right?
Yeah, and I still think he sucks with the clock, but Mahomes is so good, it's rendered that, you know, meaningless in a lot of cases. All right, Gasper, I believe, is standing by. We'll get right to him after Big Jim Murray's 90-second update. No commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.